Hello and welcome to the tech segment of We're Drunk and We Know Things. This month we are on L and we are doing Linux or Linux. It's probably one of the things to find out. apparently it's an operating system, which are probably something that I'll find out. Yeah, let's do it.
That's what I do. I drink. And I know things.
So, Mike, we are talking about Linux.
Linux.
It's actually Linux.
It's Linux.
No.
It's French.
It's Linux.
Okay. I'm out of other ways to say it.
Yeah.
Of your life.
this particular argument has been put to bed by the creator himself.
Is it Tim Berners-Lee?
No.
Is it GIF or GIF?
Technically, it is GIF.
I know, but that's stupid, isn't it?
It's ridiculous. You're wrong. Right, so, you said earlier on the intro that Linux is an operating system.
Yes.
It's technically not.
Brilliant. Good.
So I've
done the...
Before we can actually really get into what it is and where it came from and what it does, we need to understand a little bit about how a computer works.
Right.
And I don't mean how you load Excel. I mean how it actually works when you get really down into it. Up
gizmos.
To your elbow. In.
Up to your elbow, Jesus.
What's it like, you know,
it's like you've got
all creatures
down to the
great
farm
and small. And
you're going over the pharmacy and your computer be birthed.
So basically, a computer is a large amount of hardware. It's electronic switches and spinning things.
Beeping
and
things.
It's electricity flowing down different pathways.
Flashes.
And what have you.
Magnets.
And all of that electricity and all of that magnets.
Right.
Needs
all
something.
All that magnets. This is going well already. Go.
It needs something to control it. Otherwise, it doesn't work. It's just a dumb bag of
just a bag
flashing
of bits of metal.
Yeah.
Sure.
And actually, what most systems have at their heart is something that's referred to as a kernel.
Right.
As in a nut kernel, not as in...
Kernel.
Kernel.
Kernel computer.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of a that. Kernel Clink. That's one for our American listeners. No one else.
We do have some. Howdy.
Jesus Christ.
We don't have
We don't anymore.
But the kernel's job is to manage the interaction with all of the different parts.
To make sure all the bits talk to each other properly.
Yeah,
and
pretty much.
Interact with each other.
So the CPU is able to talk to the memory, which is able to talk to the hard disk, which is able to talk to the power control unit, and all of this.
Right.
And the reason that we're saying that Linux is a kernel is because it is very distinct from an operating system. It's at the heart of an operating system, but an operating system has a lot more around it. However,
can I ask
as
a question?
Well, of course.
Is DOS a kernel?
No, DOS is an operating system. That's what the O and the S stand for in DOS. Do you know what the D stands for?
No.
Do you want to?
Yeah.
Disk.
Really?
Yeah. Disk operating system.
Inspired.
Microsoft disk operating system, because it ran on a disk rather than a tape.
Okay.
Anyway, so...
I can't believe it. I'm so stupid. Okay, go on, yep.
So, in general terms, Linux is... in specific terms, Linux is just the kernel.
Right.
But it's kind of entered popular usage as describing a whole bunch of full operating systems.
Right.
And we'll talk a bit more
about
that.
Because I thought it was just like the front end, essentially. The bit you see.
No. Way more than that. So,
crap. I thought it was just going to be about what colour windows are. You remember Matrix? That's Linux.
Yeah, Linux. It's blue or green. We're done.
Yeah. So just in and out. Nice. Right. It was invented by Linus Xavier.
No.
It was invented by Lin Uks, a Korean man.
No.
That would have been amazing. Imagine if that was true.
Although, his first name is Linus.
Is it really?
Yeah. but let's Linus. Before we can get to Linus, we have to kind of set the stage, set the scene. And we do that by going back in time. Have you noticed we do this with every tech segment, right? It's like, let's talk about something modern and cutting edge. So anyway, in the 60s...
Right, okay.
When all of this shit happened.
When abacuses were a thing.
1969. Right. At AT&T, the telecoms company in the US.
Right, yep.
They had something called Bell Laboratories.
Right.
And that was their kind of exploratory and innovation centre.
You know, the canteen of Bell Laboratories became Taco Bell.
Nice.
Not really.
But...
ding, 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 ding. That's almost Pipe
that
the Tower. It's not as good as Pipe the Tower, but that was really good.
That seemed possible.
Oh, it's just off the top of my dome, that was. Okay, continue, I'm sorry.
Anyway. Meanwhile, at Taco Bell.
Okay.
Well, it seemed feasible.
I just said it so quickly that, yeah, maybe, yeah.
AT&T were building an operating system for large mainframe computers, right. And they called it Unix.
Ah, okay.
So UNIX.
Right.
This was basically first released in kind of 1971.
Okay.
And AT&T had this really weird antitrust suit against them that basically meant because they were a telecoms company, they were not allowed to be in the computer business.
Right.
Don't ask.
Isn't it compact?
No, that's a whole different thing. Are you taking your trousers off?
The sound of me taking my belt off.
Your Taco Bell?
My Taco Bell. I'm a chunky lad.
Yeah.
And the belt cuts into me.
So what that meant is that they built this operating system, and they built it in such a way that it can actually be run on a whole bunch of different types of computer.
Sure. It has to be versatile.
Really portable, right. Really versatile. Mm-hmm. And they had to give the source code to mm-hmm. anybody who asked them for it.
Right. Because
they couldn't sell it, they couldn't license it. No. But I know where you're going.
No, I've just remembered where I've heard the name Unix.
Go on.
Jurassic Park.
Yeah. Wait a minute. I know this.
It's a Unix system.
It's all going beautifully. And nerds all over the world are hacking away on
they're freaking.
Bell Labs
freaking.
Unix
yeah.
until 1984,
yeah.
which is not a typo, man.
Right.
In 1984, AT&T basically divested itself of Bell Labs. They sold the laboratory.
Right.
At which point, they could then start selling Unix. Proprietary software.
Right, okay.
So, what then happens is that you have a bunch of universities who are used to getting this thing for nothing and be able to tinker around with it because they get the source code so they can change it.
Right.
And now they've got to pay and they're not allowed to change it.
This
so
time
it becomes.
Gotta pay.
Yeah.
Right.
This time it's serious. It becomes closed source.
Right.
And this pisses a whole bunch of people off.
Sure.
Because, you know, computer scientists like.
Being able to fiddle around, yes, of course.
And one of the people it pissed off is a guy called Richard Stallman. Richard Stallman is a serious, serious character in the world of free open source software.
Right.
And this is the beginning of his story.
Right.
Because in 1983, seeing where this was all going, he started something called the GNU, or the GNU Project.
Right.
GNU as in the animal.
I feel like I've heard of it. Yeah, okay, yeah. Right, yeah.
And this was basically a project that was started with the goal of creating a complete Unix-compatible but totally free system software, which means it couldn't use any of the original source code.
Right.
It had to be written from the ground up.
Yeah.
And because they all liked Unix, they'd all been using it for years, they wanted it to just be a drop-in replacement.
Right, okay.
Just to be completely clear, GNU, GNU, G-N-U, stands for... GNU is not Unix. It's a recursive acronym.
Right, okay.
Yeah, because nerds.
Richard Stallman's already on my last nerve.
There is an amazing video of him doing an interview in which he trims his toenails with his teeth on live television.
He's like, who's you know, the guy from Ready Player One who creates the game and then disappears inside it. He's that guy.
Yeah,
then,
pretty much, yeah. Although... interestingly enough, there is also, if you dig around for it, an amazing document which are guidance notes for what to do if you are hosting Richard Stallman in your own home.
Really?
Yep. And it tells you things like, you know, sensible things like the fact that he does not require certain facilities or special treatment. Mm. It then gets a bit weird when he starts talking about the fact that he likes parrots. He does not require you to buy a parrot if he is coming, but if you have one, he will be very pleased to interact with it.
Right. So is
his rider,
he is
right?
Is this an important person that this is something that is...
Yeah. I mean, bear in mind, Stallman is a total eccentric. He's also a total genius.
Right.
He was an MIT-level mega coder. Right. And
Yeah, is he a contemporary of all the people I've heard of, like Gates and Jobs and Wozniak and all that kind of stuff? Or is he a precursor to them? Is he a peer or an inspiration?
I think they were all quite commercial.
Right.
He was way more academic.
Okay, right. Okay.
But certainly he was around at the same time. Right. I don't know if they would have ever like bumped into each other in the hall. Just also
him
different
and
universities.
Richard Feynman getting high in a van.
So work on this new project began in around about 1984, about the same time that Bell had just locked up Unix.
Sure.
And in 1985, Stallman...
Was it as a result of them locking it up? Or
more or less, yeah. It just kind of all meshed in.
Sure, okay.
Stallman started something called the Free Software Foundation. Mm-hmm. And a few years later, he wrote something called the New General Public License, which is referred to as the GPL.
Right. New General Public License is called the GPL.
Yeah, GPL, yeah.
Right, okay.
And this is important because this license deals with how you can write and release software in a completely free and non-commercial mindset. Right. So it's not about protecting your intellectual property.
Right.
It's about basically allowing collaboration and enforcing freedom.
Right.
Which is what the Free Software Foundation is all about. Yeah. One of the most common things that you'll hear when we're talking about this kind of thing is there are two correlations. Free as in beer, as in it just didn't cost me anything, and free as in speech, as in it is an enforced right that, you know, it is not just free, it is liberation and égalité and all of that shit. Now, Stallman and his team...
Yeah.
They're typing away, not monkeys. And basically, by the time they get to the early 90s, they've written a lot of tools.
Right.
So the basic bits that make an operating system work, like compilers, text editors, a shell, a window GUI system.
Right, yeah, okay.
Yeah, they'd written all of that. Mm-hmm. But they haven't...
And for our listeners that don't know what a GUI system is.
It's a graphic user interface. That's Windows and icons and mice and pointers.
I just wanted to make sure that they'd know.
But they've been so busy doing all this whizzy fun shit that they had forgotten that at the heart of an operating system is a really hard piece of software to write called a kernel.
The kernel.
They'd been working on one. It's called GNU Herd.
But it's boring and they've done nothing else.
Yeah, it kind of just stalled because they're all hippies and nobody was prepared to just say, we need to get this done. Yeah. So, so basically... New Herd is...
So they've made all the bits that they can use, but actually that fits into Unix for free that you can tinker around with.
Just so.
But actually they need something to replace the core bit of Unix itself, the kernel.
Absolutely. And device drivers to deal with disks and all of the low-level stuff that actually makes a computer work.
The boring nitty-gritty shit.
But let's face it, you know, making the computer work is amazing and very hard to do, but you actually want to be able to use things on the computer. They built all the things to use, but it didn't work.
Right.
Halfway around the world.
Meanwhile, halfway around the world.
In Helsinki.
In Helsinki.
Sweden.
Yep. Where is Helsinki really? I haven't seen no idea. Finland, Ireland.
That's a diehard gag, mate.
Oh, okay.
As in Helsinki, Sweden. Finland.
Yes. Oh, yes, of course. Yes, now I know.
A chap is studying, and he is using a clone of Unix that has been written called Minix. And Minix has a weird licensing requirement, which is that it's free to use if you're in education. So if you're a student or a university, you can use it. But if you want to use it anywhere else, you'll pay.
Okay.
And he's basically pissed off with this because he thinks this is ridiculous. And
he's not a student anymore and now he's got to pay for it.
Well, it also that software should be free and it should just work, right?
Yeah,
so
sure.
Similar kind of alignment to Stallman. And... he basically decided, hang on, lads, I've got an idea. I'm going to write my own kernel.
Amazing Finnish accent, by the way. Oh, hey, come on, lads, let's have it.
Yeah.
Let's do a new kernel.
Well, it's Helsinki, isn't it?
I'm from Helsinki. Perfect, brilliant.
Helsinki's so he decides he's going to write his own kernel.
Right.
Because the new project doesn't have one. They have everything else.
Yeah.
Or near as damn it.
They need their kernel.
But we need the kernel. We've got to make it work.
Yeah. You could sell it to them for $1 million.
No, free.
Mugs.
And so he starts work on, and there is a very famous message, which is basically, He sent to a mailing list and he said, hey everyone, I'm going to start work on a new open source kernel project.
Right.
It's just a hobby.
Right. Famous last words.
That's in mind.
Famous last words.
For what comes a little bit later on. And he's tapping away, and a couple of things happen. Firstly, he writes the first version, and it works.
Right.
And then he starts getting people who are interested in contributing and helping him make this more than it is. Mm-hmm. Because they've realised, actually, if you take his kernel, mm-hmm. and you take all of these lovely utilities that mm-hmm. Stallman's lot have written...
Yeah, yeah.
Hang on a minute, we've got a full operating system here, and it's completely free.
Yeah.
No licenses, not having to pay Microsoft or Bell or whoever else. You know, we can just do whatever we want with it, and we get the source code, so we can tinker with it.
Yeah, you can make it. You can
make it better, we can change it, personalise it. Yeah. Now, interestingly, Linus originally wanted to call his invention, the kernel, Freaks.
Right, with a PH. It's going to be with a PH.
No, it's actually with an F.
Oh, okay.
The PH thing doesn't really work in Finland. They're quite like Fs in Finland.
Bloody nerds.
Otherwise, it'd be PH inland.
Finland. That's how you say PHs. No, we're moving on.
He had basically bandied around the idea of calling it Linux or Linux.
Yeah.
But decided that that was way too egotistical.
Right.
But one of the guys that he was working on it with tidied Lionel. Up a bunch of...
So he's not actually named after Linus at all, he's named after Lionel, his mate.
No, his name wasn't Lionel. But he tidied up a bunch of the source code and thought that Freaks was a stupid name, which it is.
It is, yeah.
And put everything in a folder called Linux.
Right, okay.
And it stuck.
Right, okay.
What we then kind of get into is a really weird explosion of interest in this completely free operating system from really, really smart people who have very specific computing requirements.
Right.
Basically, people who are running things like supercomputers.
Right.
Because they need to be customizable. You can't just stick Windows on it and be like, there you go.
There's a supercomputer download from comes with Microsoft Office.
Windows supercomputer edition.
Yeah, and also
you play solitaire really quickly.
It's a pain in the ass. It's a fucking pain in the ass to build a kernel. If we've got one that I can use and adapt to my needs, then why wouldn't you?
Tweak and what have you. So
at which
people
point
like
Microsoft are trying to sue the shit out of this guy, presumably for
not yet
being alive.
Not yet.
You said it was a hobby. Fuck you.
You can't sue somebody for that. I changed my mind. Illegal. Maybe you can.
I don't know.
Some of the supercomputers are people like NASA.
Really?
You know, they have a big computing requirement. They have a lot of very smart people who can code and tweet this stuff. It wasn't popular, and by and large, still isn't.
And also, those people's time is better spent working for NASA than going, well, we need to get a room full of people to build us a kernel and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess so, yeah.
Then what we start to get is the realisation that, hang on a minute, this thing is now being used by NASA. Mm. It is stable, solid, decent software.
It's legit.
It's legit. It's too legit 100% useful. And the likes of Dell, IBM, and Hewlett-Packard start offering Linux support, basically to try and escape Microsoft's monopoly
of
the desktop computer market.
Our computers can have Linux on there if you want to install it on.
And we will support you if you install it.
Okay, right.
Because previously it was a bit like when you used to jailbreak your iPhone, your warranty's void.
Yeah,
well, actually, a lot of the agreements that these companies had with Microsoft, if you installed anything that wasn't Windows...
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Right, okay.
And then we get this, like, crazy massive moment where Steve Jobs stood up and showed the world a phone that had more processing power than, you know, any computer.
The Lunar Lander.
Yeah. It nuts. And then somebody at a small company called Google decided they wanted their own version, but even a phone operating system requires a kernel.
So it's Android based on...
Android
sorry, I don't want to
is based around Linux.
Really? Which is why it's open source?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Which is why nerds love it so much.
And that goes nuts. Meanwhile, you know, the Linux team are still working on it, and it's being used all over the place.
So, sorry.
Go on.
Is Linux at this point a company?
Nope.
Is this Linus guy still knocking about somewhere, sat in a garage?
Oh, very much so. He's not in a garage. He works from his home.
Sure.
And we'll talk a bit
but
more about
not
him.
Linux LLC. You can't go and buy a box with Linux operating system on it or whatever. It's still very much a
there is no one Linux operating system. Sure. There is one Linux kernel, right. But even that, because of the way that the kernel works, is customizable, tweakable, and often changed.
Okay. Yeah.
So. Basically, we're now at a situation kind of moving up to present day where Torvalds continues to direct development of the kernel.
Right.
And when I say direct, he now has thousands of developers working on this and sending him code. And this is just for the kernel, although it's very hard to write.
Yeah.
And this keeps up with things like, well, you know, we built this originally to run on one type of computer.
Yeah.
It now needs to run on 50 different types of computer, these types of phones, power improvements, USB came along and that needed support and all the rest of this stuff. Yeah. So it's an ongoing thing.
Right.
Stallman is still kicking around and he still heads up the Free Software Foundation. And in turn, they support the new tooling.
Right. Okay, so when they update the kernel for new bits and pieces, they build the new bits and pieces on top of it. So the
They kind of run in parallel.
So they build
to be
like all the stuff for like so it operates through a touchscreen, and they would build apps for Android and stuff like that as well. Then I guess
no, okay. That's another layer again. Right, and these are the individuals and corporations that develop third-party applications that run on top of the Linux kernel and use potentially some of the new. Okay. Components. Now we're in a situation where we've got a fully, wholly rounded out operating system.
Right.
So what we then need to do is we take our kernel, we take some of the new components and the other non-new components combine them. We add additional bits and pieces like, say, package management.
Right.
We pick a GUI and what have you, and we bundle it all up into something that is referred to as a Linux distribution.
Right.
And that is a fully formed OS.
Right, but there are a million of those. Because the kernel and everything is so customizable, you've made one that's got dragons all over it. Our producer's got one that's got, like, big erect penises all over it. Whatever, you know. Whatever you might like.
Penix.
Amazing.
It was better than the previous effort, Cock OS.
Oh, yeah. Penix. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So you can then essentially just go online through your Linux GUI browser and say, have you seen this? I've made this. Anybody else fancy it? And then I could take it from you, and then I could change it from dragons to flowers or whatever the hell. But I might like the certain bits and pieces that you've built.
Yep.
So it's all totally collaborative, totally free, totally do whatever the hell you like.
By and large, yeah.
And so all the tools and bits and pieces that Stallman are building and all the different things that the third-party developers are building then are word processing software, all that kind of shit as well. So,
well, what we're going to do in a moment is we're going to run through the components that make up an operating system.
Right, okay.
So in a modern Linux system, we've got basically the kernel at the heart of it. We've got, the next layer above the kernel, which handles organizing all the hardware and interfacing with it, is something that's called the init system.
Init! Could you explain it to me in terms of either Wreck-It Ralph or hackers? It's like a city online.
Yeah, why not?
let's do Wreck-It Ralph first.
No. Because Wreck-It Ralph is clearly a decentralized system. So what you have is the kernel at the heart, and then on top of that, the kernel then basically starts. If you think of it as a machine that has one tiny bit of it, and you switch it on, and then that bit goes off and switches on other bits of the machine
it's
and
like
plugs
a spark
stuff
plug
in.
That starts an engine.
Very similar, although massively simplified.
Yeah, that's what we're going for.
Yeah. So. The spark plug starts the engine, and the engine then starts, you know, a whole bunch of ancillary, very important services, like the fuel pump.
Right.
No, the windscreen wipers are not important.
If it's in relative terms,
you're not moving yet.
Got to be able to see. Oh, okay, we're not moving yet. It's fine.
You know, things like the fuel pump, the cooling system, oil,
sure,
all of this, and this you could make the equivalent line to say that that is your init system.
Yeah.
It starts everything. Isn't the kernel, but the kernel starts it. Mm. And even
is
this
is it called that? Is because it's
It initialize it, short for initialize.
Not because it does everything else in it.
In it, no. Now, the thing I quite like about init systems is people get really passionate about them in the Linux world.
Right.
To the point where actual fights have broken out.
Fights, in it?
Yeah. Most recently over the change from something called System V or Sys V
to System V
to System D.
Oh my god! I honestly,
it wasn't just the name change; it was a massive structural change into how the stuff works.
Like,
but still, it's
thing.
Like really
V to D. No, come on. All right, moving on.
V to the D.
Right. So System V to System D. There was a fight.
Odd.
Right. Presumably, like two people who have never fought in their lives.
Yeah, it was over very
quickly.
It wasn't
much of a fight, though, was it?
But there was a lot of mudslinging and flaming online, and it's still kind of ongoing.
Really?
This happens a lot. If you have a situation where...
It's like Spaces versus
You have a lot of very clever people who are good at programming computers.
Yeah.
And you've given them total freedom to do whatever the hell they want with those systems. Can you imagine?
Having just talked about the fandom of Star Wars, is this like a million times worse, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Oh,
and
God, I hate
the
so
Venn intersection is fairly high.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So the init system is up and running, and right. Then you've got what we refer to as user space or user land. Yeah, I really like this.
This is getting like Wreck-It Ralph.
And this is where all of your applications actually run. So these are things like the windscreen wipers
the
radio
and
the AC.
Right, okay.
And the sunroof. And userland is basically
the sunroof. Okay.
Well, yeah, it's completely not required for the
fancy,
car to operate,
fancy car,
or the engine to operate.
Sunroof is fancy.
I'm sorry, just cranking away madly.
Sounds like me.
Then you realise your car doesn't have a sunroof, and that's a tin opener.
Oh boy. Okay, so we've got the next level, the next layer.
Yeah, and userland is pretty much where everything runs. So you start up your word processor; it's in userland.
Right.
You've also, generally speaking, in any operating system of note that isn't Windows, you've got the ability to install new software.
Sure.
But it's done using something that's been around for a while in the Linux world called a package management system.
Right.
Now, the easiest way to...
Really? It's managing their packages. And tell me, does the package management system work on the V or the D system?
It works on both.
Oh, of course it does. You're saying the package management system goes both ways.
They are moving over to D.
Sorry, we just had no
more way. And more people are going for D.
Well, the Greeks were right.
Yeah.
The ancient Greeks.
The package manager lets you install software.
Right.
The best example of a package management system, you have one on your phone, it's called the App Store.
Right, okay.
Right?
Sure.
So they are pre-packaged applications. Mm-hmm. You can download them, install them, update them.
Yeah.
And you can do it all from nice, easy
command. It manages your packages.
It does.
I gotcha.
Yeah,
and your packages, in this case, are apps.
And normally, you will have... In fact, not normally, that's complete bollocks. Because a lot of Linux systems don't have one, but you would be expecting there to be some form of Windows system.
Right,
so this
yeah.
is your GUI.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And
okay.
this is another layer on top again.
Yeah, so the button you press to go into the App Store that says, do you want to download this game?
Well, the fact that there is a button at all
button.
And not just a blinking cursor and, you know, text-only interface.
Right. Okay.
Now, being free and open source software, there are about a million of every one of these things.
Oh, really? Amazing.
And this is where defining what Linux is gets a little bit tricky. Because...
It's whatever you want it to be, man.
Pretty much.
It's the stuff the dream's made of.
And the biggest problem that Linux has as an ecosystem of operating systems
right.
is that people get into fights about the best way to do things
right.
and they take their toys home and do it themselves.
Right, so it's like, hey man, this is all open and collaborative, but actually fuck you guys, I'm going to go and do it my own way because you don't agree with every single bit I'm doing.
See? You're a natural at this.
No, I've just been on message boards before.
Yeah.
I've been on Facebook before.
And what's really interesting is that actually there is only one Linux kernel.
There's only one
Linux kernel. because they're quite hard to write. But even that you can tweak and tinker with. Once you get further up, there's different init systems, there's different package systems. There's, crumbs. So many variants.
And also, so there's like, you make a toolkit with a version of all these different things in it, say it's 100 things.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want all of it, I just want one of your 100 things. So I could then combine 100 different people's bits I know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
To make one big Frankenstein penix.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So it's ad nauseum, the possibilities for combinations.
Yeah. And that's just user land software. You still have, you know, different people like different interfaces. There's different requirements. You know, touch interfacing is very different to how you would interact with a computer using a mouse and a keyboard.
Yep.
Some systems don't have any requirement for an interface at all.
Because they just want to type all the code.
It's a server, right? It doesn't actually, you never interact with it. It just sits there and runs things.
I was going to ask you earlier, why does anyone bother with Windows if there is all this available for free? I think I've just worked out why. Because it's a fuck of a lot easier to get a box from Windows and get everything. Hey, oh, they make the decision for you.
Partially, and the fact that there is a massive amount of work. Microsoft puts a lot of work into making sure that Windows on your desktop interacts really nicely with Windows running your email and running your file server and all the rest of it.
Whereas if I took 100 bits from 100 different people, I've got to
you
make
have
sure
to glue them together. And a lot of that glue does exist. And what's really interesting is there's actually
more difficult than,
you know, Linux versions of Windows systems.
Right.
There's something called Samba. Dum-dum-dum-da-dum-da-dum. And that does things like, you know, user logon and file shares, basically.
Yeah.
And it's completely compatible with Windows.
Right, okay.
Designed to be.
Right.
So
what's the point of that?
Well, it means that if you've got Windows clients,
right, okay,
Windows on your desktop or your laptop, you can connect it and Windows won't know any different. It doesn't know that it's not talking to a Windows server.
Okay.
And it's free. So we've got all of these different possible components, and each combination of these is referred to as a distro. I'm not going to go through all the distros, because, well, as we're about to find out, there are hundreds.
It would distro my mind.
But the other thing, of course, is that even with user source packages, there are different requirements. You know, you want something from a computer, you want to be able to maybe listen to some music, you want to be able to browse the web, fairly standard stuff, and you might want to occasionally edit some film.
Yeah?
Right. I need to be able to write code, and I want to be able to control my robotic fridge.
Sure.
Our producer, well, let's just say that he did go through a period of being banned from owning a computer or using a touchtone phone.
He just needs to automate a lot of locks on cages.
Yeah. Anyway, so the requirements are all different, which means that even if we get one system, you're immediately going to start customizing it and installing your own stuff to make it do the things that you want it to do.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, like, makes sense. Yeah.
The distro world is a bit complicated because there's so many of them, but they can be broken down into kind of three main flavors.
Oh. This is like a Cornetto type thing.
And these are basically three main preferences as to which package management system we're going to use, which init system we're going to use, so those components, and which general approach to certain things we're going to take.
Right. And these would have, because you want to use them for different things.
They're pretty much identical in and of themselves. Mm-hmm. They just make that fundamental decision up front.
Right.
Okay. And you then tend to use that as the basis to create something new and custom.
Right.
So a lot of the distros are basically kind of sired by these three high-level categories, which are actually distros in their own right.
Right, right, yeah.
So you've got Debian.
Debian.
Yep.
Right.
Literally named after Debbie and Ian.
Yes!
The creator.
Debbie McGee.
No.
Ian Beale.
No, Ian was the creator. Was the dev. He did actually, I think he killed himself. Kind of sad.
So would you if you met Debbie?
Dispersions
of people I've never met.
Well, Debian does things in a certain way, and it then led rise to, I mean, it's been really popular in its own right, but it led rise to a couple of notable distros. One called Nopix, which, K-N-O-P-P-I-X.
Right.
Which is one of the first distros, I think, that if I've got this right, you could actually run it on a CD.
Right.
Okay. So you didn't have to install it. It would just run live.
Right, okay.
And that was kind
so
of useful.
Useful for being on the go? So not being, I don't know.
Or just being able to like drop a disk into any computer and it boots from the disk rather than having to go through all the kerfuffle of installing. Also useful, to be honest, for doing things like maintenance, forensics, if you want to access a computer without touching it.
Oh, because you can still get into the existing operating system and kernel using the one on the distro.
Yeah.
What's up, man?
And the biggest offspring of Debian is an operating system called Ubuntu.
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 Son of Debian.
more or less, massively over outstripped Debian in terms of its reach and user base.
Right.
That's been made incredibly popular. In fact, a lot of people have said that it's the reason that Linux enjoyed, in fact, kind of its next epoch,
right,
or revolution.
Okay.
Because Ubuntu's mission from the outset was to make Linux more accessible,
right,
to non-super mega techie geeks.
To the lay.
Yeah.
Sure.
So you've got Debian based over here.
Right.
Over there, you've got the Red Hat family.
Right.
Now, Red Hat is interesting because Red Hat is actually commercial Linux. You have to pay for it.
Right, okay.
But it's based around all of the free stuff.
Right.
So what you pay them for is effectively them pulling it all together, gluing it together.
Right.
But they still have to give you the source code if you ask for it. So it's complicated.
Yeah.
The main reason that you might want this is because if you're a company, you probably want to make sure that you've got something that has a bit of a guarantee.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And then you can fiddle around with it if you need to.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, yeah, that makes
and
sense.
That's what
that
Red Hat do. That's their business model. They say, actually, we do enterprise-ready Linux.
Yeah.
We guarantee that it's secure, that it's patched, it's updated, and that it won't blow up.
But
or
it's much easier to adapt to your needs should you run
but
like
it's
a Windows.
Linux compatible, yeah. And you can install all of the Linux apps, and you can tweak it and what have you.
Right.
And there is a free version of Red Hat
down
the chain a little bit called CentOS.
Of course.
Don't ask.
Of course, why wouldn't it be?
And there's another free version of Red Hat, which is actually where they go to experiment with stuff, and that's called Fedora.
Okay, well, that will make slightly more sense. Okay.
So, Red Hat has a whole bunch of different offspring, and they, again, use a different package management system, a different way of doing things.
Yeah, sure.
And then, in the middle, you've got pretty much everything else. Right. There have been a whole bunch that say, well, actually, I don't want to base it on Debian. I want to just roll my own.
People just could do it for shits and giggles, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's probably quite a good way to learn how to do quite a lot of stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean, there is actually a distro called Arch or Arc, Arch Linux, which is very much geared around, we will do as little for you as we can.
Sure.
We want you to learn and customize your own system.
Yeah, that's cool.
So you literally boot the thing and then you have to install everything.
How interchangeable are the... Say you... I did that. I'm not suggesting for a second that I would, because... Come on. But say I were to do that, how interchangeable are the skills I would learn in order to do that with everything else? Is it programming?
No.
Or is it Linux? I wouldn't be
Linux
able to then go and do programming on a Windows machine or whatever.
Definitely not. Although there are certain similarities...
The logic is all the same, maybe?
Kind of. But again, it depends very much on what components they've used. So you can be an expert in a systemd-based system, and you can sit down in front of a systemv-based system, and nothing that you try and do will work, because the commands are all
different.
It
always comes down to the D and the V.
The D and the V. Likewise, you know, if you're used to using the Red Hat Package Manager, which I love, by the way, because it's called Yum.
Right, yeah.
Then you sit down at a Debian-based system and you type yum install and it's kind of like, what?
Really?
What are you talking about? My package management system's called apt.
So I can see more and more then what you're saying about how it becomes quite tribal. Because, well, I use D and I use V. Well, I use Debian and I use Ubuntu. Well, I do this and I do this.
Yeah.
Like, wankers, God.
The thing is, you do actually get to the point if you use a lot of them that you get some interchangeable and you just learn how to Google the rest.
Right, okay, fine.
So, anyway...
That's how I do everything.
What do we use? The other thing, as I said, Red Hat is paid, and some of the other distros are actually commercial. So you've got SUSE, I think, S-U-S-E, which is amazing because it's really green. Their branding is like crazy green.
Okay.
And I think their logo's a chameleon.
Really? A chameleon?
But its eye follows your mouse pointer around the screen when you're installing it,
so you're
just getting eyeballed by a chameleon the entire time.
Right, okay.
Very strange introduction to an operating system. And as I say, even the paid ones are still open, so you can still get the stuff.
Yeah, yeah, you're just paying him to do half the donkey work.
Last count, there were 879 different distros.
Right, so that's just your basic bare bones, 879.
879 different flavors, variants, and versions.
Jesus.
And that does actually cover some of the mobile stuff, but it doesn't cover any of the smaller customized options, and that's literally the bare bones before you start building stuff on top. So, yeah, it's a little fragmented.
Yeah. Especially if you learn how to use one and don't necessarily know how to use the other one. That's crazy.
So now we're going to play a little game before we get on to the amazing fact and wrap this up. Because there are so many distributions.
Right.
And basically, I'm going to say a name of a Linux distribution.
Right.
And I want you to tell me whether or not it's a real distribution.
Real.
Or whether or not it's made up.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, so we're going to start you off with a nice easy one.
Right.
Slackware.
Slackware.
Is that a real Linux distribution or is it fake?
I'm going to say it's not, because it sounds like software. You wouldn't name a distro that. I think you'd name software. That's like an app for slackers.
It actually is a Linux distribution.
This is going to be 50-50 every time.
And it's one of the oldest distributions still being maintained.
So not that slack then, is it?
No.
They should be called organisedware.
Okay. Next up, Puppy Linux.
Puppy Linux.
Yep.
Now, we have already had Peanux, and your Linux has got dragons all over it, so there's no reason to say there isn't puppies all over this one.
Is it real?
Puppy Linux. Not like Puppix or something. I'm going to say fake again.
No, that's also real.
God damn it! Puppy Linux?
Yep.
There has to be a measure of creativity in order to create these things, and they came up with the name Puppy Linux. What should we call it? Well, it's Linux, yeah? What do you like? Puppies? No, something specific to you that you like, not just something that everyone likes. Yeah, puppies.
No, that's it. We're just going to run with puppies.
Puppy
we
Linux.
Love them. Yep. Okay. Next up, is this a real Linux distribution? Mangino.
Mangino?
Mangino.
It's like a cross between Mandingo and Mangino. Mangino?
Real or not real?
Not real.
It's not real.
Yeah,
but yeah. There is a real one called Manjaro.
Manjaro, okay. Oh, so you saw Manjaro and changed to Mangino. Yeah. I get you. We're riffing.
You know, it's fun.
Mangino. By the way, for the comic book that we haven't written yet, can the bad guy be called Mangino?
I think
it
has to be.
It's Mangino!
Dr. Mangino!
With the power to put his cock between his legs.
Okay.
Mangino.
Next up, real or not, really tiny Linux.
Really tiny Linux? Mm-hmm. I'm going to say that's real. I feel like it's like a super compact
not.
One. Oh, God damn it. Is there a really big Linux or something?
There is one that's called Damn Small Linux.
Ah, is it because it's super compact?
It is. It's tiny. It just...
It's not like Little John.
Yeah, it fits on like 4 megabytes or something. It's crazy small.
4 megabytes?
Yeah, it's titchy. Okay. Next up, we had Debian.
Mm-hmm.
Raspbian? Yeah. Raspbian.
Right. That's the. It's been made by Razel, the beatboxer, and the Mexican jumping bean. No, I'm going to say that one is real.
It is real.
Yeah.
It's actually a Debian fork that was designed to run on the Raspberry Pi.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, of course.
See?
But surely all. Raspberry Pi all runs on a Linux, right? Because it's like an open source number.
Yeah, but this was the one that it came with. So,
Right, okay.
And the final... Okay, we've got one more that my producer just brought to my attention. This is a good one. Is this real or fake? Red Star OS.
Red Star OS. I'm going to say it's fake, and it's a play on something, because it's going to be called like Blue Square OS or something, I don't know.
Red Star OS is a real Linux distribution.
Right.
And if I've got this right, it is the official distribution of North Korea.
Really?
They wrote their own.
Oh, well, God bless them.
Yeah.
That's what they're running. No wonder the nuclear problems. They want to get Windows.
Well, they can't run Windows. What's it?
The licensing doesn't cover it or something.
They're sanctioned.
Sanctioned?
Yeah,
right.
That's the budget. Okay.
So hang on. Telling me Linux is the official operating system of despots and tyrants, not tyrannosaurs.
It's free and customizable.
They might use it too.
Okay, and the last one.
I wish I care for it.
before I go into this, you do know the Spice Girls, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay, good.
They were here earlier.
So, did you not see them? Is this a real Linux distribution? Emma Buntus.
Emma Buntus?
Is it real? Or is it fake?
Buntus. Oh, God, I'd love it if she was now a programmer. I'm going to say it's real, because programmers are sad.
It is real.
Yes!
Emma Buntus.
Emma Buntus.
It's based on Ubuntu and Debian stable branch.
Fantastic.
Anyway, we could actually play this game for quite a lot longer. But one of the things that you will realise...
get the people making these, making these destros bloody laid. Let's get them laid.
Truth is often stranger than fiction when it comes to the wonderful world of Linux distribution. So that leaves us with, well, do you have any questions at this stage in the proceedings?
And are there any, like, obvious pop culture famous computer bits that I will have seen that I'll be like, you were like, oh, there's Linux. And I'll be like, oh, okay.
Obvious ones.
Yeah.
I know this.
I know this.
It's a Unix system.
Oh, yeah, other than Jurassic
probably the
Park.
Most infamous.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
There are a couple of...
I love how she's just suddenly a hacker at the end. It's so weird. Anyway,
no, yeah. She did it at school. There is, as I say, the Matrix actually has some real hacking in it.
Right.
Using real tools that run on the Linux stack. Mm-hmm. There's another really famous one. I can't remember what the hell it is.
That's Andy. Thank God we haven't got a podcast.
Well, thank God that I'm the film expert. Oh, wait.
Well, it doesn't extend to bloody Linux.
The amazing fact, not that amazing, because it's not really surprising, but there is a project out there.
Right.
Which counts how many people use Linux.
Right. It's called Linux Counter OS.
It's called linuxcounter.com.
Oh, God. Okay. Well, what else
what
are you
call expecting it? Them
no,
to call
that's,
it?
No, I'm being unfair. That's reasonable.
And the flibbdygibbity.net site.
That would be weird. You'd never be able to work that out, would you? And then, like, every time you typed it in wrong, it would always come up in your search history. Every single time you typed in flib, it would be a fucking nightmare.
And, yeah, anyway. So, the amazing fact for our Linux discussion is that there are actually an estimated 94 million Linux users worldwide.
What's the population of North Korea? Because they're definitely all Linux.
If they can afford a computer.
They have, well, you don't know. Well, apparently it's a very rich country. Apart from all the starving.
It's not. No.
It's not, no, famously not.
So yeah, 94 million, of which some of them are despots, but some of them are not, and would quite like to pet a parrot if you have one in your home when they come to visit.
I understand the attraction of it, but it just sounds like the factionalism of it just sounds typical of people.
Yeah. That said, it has managed to make its way very firmly into professional companies that need to do kind of long-running or very, very high availability, high throughput computing tasks.
Sure, yeah, of course, yeah.
It's estimated that something like 65% of the web servers in the world, so this is the stuff that runs the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
TBL, big up.
big up, TBL, protect your neck. I don't know where I'm meant to be from with that accent, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm being shown numbers. I didn't have time to actually read them.
24 million people
in
North Korea.
Yeah, 79%. I'm being shown a correction. So 79% of the web servers in the world run Linux because it's actually very good at staying online. It doesn't fall over. It doesn't crash very easily. And
there's a lot of like virus susceptibility and stuff because why would they make...
It's quite secure.
Yeah, why would people make viruses for it if that's... The people making the viruses... probably are the people using it, so I guess.
Well, maybe. And of course, the hidden success story being Android, and the number of Android devices on the planet is kind of scary. I think it's something like, it's billion. It's a very big number.
Can you get Linux on Mac? Well, it's a completely different thing, isn't it? Could you install it on a Mac?
You can.
I suppose a computer, it's just all the same bits.
I'm not going to lie. I have installed Linux on a Mac, and depending on the Mac, and how old it is and what have you, it works with varying degrees of success. Mm. Certainly installing it on a laptop is a bit of a pain because Linux pretty much involves two mouse buttons, Apple.
Yeah.
Linux likes two mouse buttons, like the rest of the world.
Yeah, so the peripherals, yeah.
Yeah. So one of the big questions that get asked a lot, albeit not by you, is if Linux is free, why isn't it everywhere? And you've kind of put your finger on one of the problems, which is it is very bifurcated, very variated.
Sure. Variegated. And you've got to have some kind of knowledge of how to use it, right?
Yeah, and this is something that the Linux community has been trying to do for ages, which is to get Linux on the desktop to be as simple as macOS or as straightforward as Windows.
Right.
And by and large, I'm not aware they've had very little success.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because most people use Windows from the outset. It's what's in school. It's what they then go on to use at work.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's probably what they run at home. Or they use a Mac at home and jump between the two. And they like the Mac because it just works. And then it can be a bit fiddly. That said, you probably interact with Linux on a daily basis without even realizing it.
Okay.
I said the number of web servers and websites that run on Linux-based systems.
Right. Okay.
It's incredibly desirable in kind of cloud computing and hosting server-based stuff.
Purely because it is so.
It's so stable.
So yeah. Okay.
You know, it's quite possible to have a Linux server that's been up and running for, well, a year is totally doable.
Wow.
3-4 years is not unheard of.
Wow. Okay.
Without kind of rebooting, without crashing,
how,
without going down at all.
How often do the Amazon servers go down?
Sorry?
How often do the Amazon servers go down?
The servers themselves don't tend to be the problem.
Isn't that the rest of the...
It's more the potatoes.
Right.
There was the big outage that affected the Irish Amazon data centre.
Yep.
And that was actually due to a fire at the power plant further up the way.
Right. Well, that's
yeah, seems, well, we can't really do much about that.
No, it seems unreasonable to blame.
Not Linux's fault.
No.
There we go. I suppose that when we think about kind of where it's going, there are a couple of obvious points.
Yeah.
One, it's going to space.
Right. Well, NASA are using it.
Well, NASA aren't really a thing massively anymore. But SpaceX.
Oh, wow,
use
cool.
Linux to control the thrusters on the Falcon rocket.
Oh, really?
Yep. And they also use Linux to run all of the software in mission control.
Oh, wow. Well, it's super stable and super customizable. So, yeah.
And again, same as NASA when they realise that they've got really smart people.
Come on.
And even in certain other environments where Microsoft has previously had an almost automatic in.
Yeah.
Governments, for example,
There
are now governments that are starting to question whether or not they should be paying for software that they could get for free. There was a really good experiment run by, I want to say Munich. It was somewhere in Germany, a German city, and they said, no, we're getting rid of Windows and Office. We're going to run free Office software. We're going to run a free operating system.
Yeah.
And we're going to save ourselves 10 gajillion quid every year.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And they did it. Brazil has also done something very similar.
Right.
And increasingly, as we get more...
If you want to get, especially with, more impoverished countries, then if you want to get it to the masses... Are we going to buy licenses, millions of fucking licenses, for schools across the whole country to Microsoft? Or are we going to get free versions of it and get every single kid learning how to type and everything else?
Yep.
Get the free version, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. And this is what I was going on to say, is actually the kind of developing world where you can barely afford the hardware to run it, let alone 150 quid for a Windows license.
Yeah.
It's going to be massively and increasingly popular. The other thing we haven't really talked about is that Linux as an operating system and a kernel can be what's referred to as embedded. So it can run on like a chip, not a computer.
Right.
And therefore it pops up in the strangest places, like smart TVs. A lot of those are based on Linux.
Really? Okay.
And you know, car entertainment systems and indeed car control systems.
Sure. Okay.
Which is kind of scary.
So SpaceX, we were talking about that. Tesla, their cars run on Linux.
I don't know if Tesla do. I'll be honest. I phoned it in with the research this time around. I didn't think we'd get this far, to be honest. Thought you would have glazed over by then.
Jokes on you. You were interesting.
So, it's not set for world domination, but it's definitely
sound like
not going
that was
anywhere
ever their plan,
anytime
to be
soon.
Fair.
And for a hobby project from a guy in Helsinki University, it's not half bad.
This has been the tech segment of We're Drunk and We Know Things. We have been at Mike's Cantina drinking Jaipur this session. We'll be back next month with M, for which we'll be putting a poll up online for you lovely people to screw us over again and find something we don't want to talk about.
All that remains for us to say, really, is have a very Merry Christmas.
And a very Happy New Year.
In the new year.
Pah!
You wanna hit my taco, 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 Taco Bell? You want my spicy, icy, icy, spicier than hell? You wanna hit my taco, 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 Taco Bell? My meri, eri, achi, achi, just ignore the smell. You wanna hit my taco, 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 Taco Bell? You want my spicy, icy, icy, spicier than hell?
It's the new, it's about a magical time travel yeah. back door. Keanu
manage,
Reeves is always
manage more, my package.
Keanu Reeves is constantly knocking at a back door with his package manager.